Twitter is my lifeline right now. I follow. I have like 100. I follow 154 handles, and probably 150 of them are soccer related.
Only 154, Steve. You're a rookie here, man. I've got 4 Twitter accounts, and I follow at least 300 on each of them.
Wow.
But I've got one dedicated strictly to just the just follow MLS players and just see what they're talking about. Yeah. And just because everybody else, you know, all the news and stuff happens elsewhere. Oh, by the way, we're live right now on Ustream. This is the Midnight Ride Revolution Recap. I'm Hank Alexandre with my co-hosts, as always, Sean Donahue and Brian O'Connell. Sean and Brian, it's been a while. It's great to have you back on the show. We're looking forward to the preseason. Is just about ready to gear up for the Revs. What are you guys' initial thoughts here?
Well, it's disappointing to hear the news about Steve Ralston not being back. But, you know, there hasn't been a lot of moves from the Revs. We've heard of them bringing in guys for trials. No real big signings yet that we're aware of. They had an interesting draft that I'm sure I'll talk about later. But as of right now, it still looks like there's a lot of holes that they need to fill on the roster before the season starts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Brian, what do you got?
Yeah, I got to say this. I got to agree with Sean. I mean, the loss to Steve Ralston, I think that he was kind of, I mean, maybe a lot of us thought incorrect. I mean, obviously incorrectly, but a lot of us thought he would be back, even though he wouldn't be back till June. A lot of us assumed that he would be back, and to see that he goes over to, you know, AC St. Louis, and just, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, it wasn't news to a lot of people, but it was news to me when I saw that. When I saw him kind of just say, okay, well, you know what, I'm gonna become player coach over there, and you know, I'll see you later, MLS. So, you know, that's a huge, huge, like, as if they didn't have enough holes to plug, they have another huge one in Steve Ralston, a guy that not obviously is not only the captain, but also a guy that can play pretty much anywhere on the field. So they've got their work cut out for themselves this year.
Yeah, they do. And also, I don't want to neglect our guest fan participant, Mr. Steve Storr. Steve, you and I have been chatting back and forth for over a month or so on Twitter now. You're both Revolution fans. You're also a Newcastle United fan, right?
Yes, I am. Bleed black. Right.
Gotta love the barcodes. we share a lot in common there. So, Steve, what are your initial thoughts of you know, looking at the Revs? Kind of, you know, you know that you didn't have a lot of time to watch a lot of games last year, but you know, what are your initial thoughts coming into this season?
Well, I mean, I look at, you know, the last few years, the success, like the relative success we've had over the last decade, and I think that a lot of the players that were really central to it are gone. Twelman's the only one really who's left, and he's debatable at this point, and Joseph's the only other one. And I wonder, we talk a lot about trying to fill the holes up front because of Twelman's uncertain health, because of losing Ralston, but I'm more concerned with the fact that we've had 5 outgoing players, only 1 incoming at this point, and most of that's been in defense and midfield. And I know, Hank, I had talked to you about the possibility of going after Adrian Cirio, and no one's talked about that at all because it's not really a rumor, but I'm still going to harp on that because I actually think that would be a really good move considering Larenowitz left, Keeps gone, Iggy, you know, and Albright gone. It would actually be a really good cover move for us, but we've got a lot of work to do, but I mean, Nickel always finds a way to make us competitive, so I have faith.
Right. You and I did chat back and forth about that. I think it would be an excellent move. You know, I also like the perhaps moving maybe Emmanuel Osei out into the left side, put Corey Gibbs in the middle. And then, you know, Pat Phelan is still here. He's not Jeff Larenowitz, but, you know, he's going to be the backup. He's probably going to be starting the season the way the team is right now, if you look at it holistically, unless they get somebody like Adrian Cirio to come in and fill that second defensive midfielder spot. You know, from my point of view, the what happened in the draft, in our pre-draft show, we talked a lot about, you know, how everybody was – really looking for a new striker, and that was everybody's first thought. But when you break it down, we're really going to be thin on the defensive line, and if we didn't have Jeff Lorenowitz or Steve Ralston, you know, what that was going to mean to the team. Also, the goalkeeping situation, that was a concern. So, you know, you take a look right off the bat what the Revs did in the draft. Where they traded Chris Albright was the first move of the day. And they got those two extra draft picks, which, you know, we'll get into the draft a little bit later. But then, you know, the rumors started coming out about the Lorenowitz and Thompson deal. And, you know, I think it was the consensus of the show, in the pre-draft show that, you know, if we need to sign Jeff Lorenowitz, if he's going to be in MLS, we'd want him to be playing for the Revs. I guess, and Sean, maybe you know a little bit more, Brian, there was something going on where, you know, he wanted to go overseas, he wanted to do that, but because of his knee injury, he didn't go, and just ended up taking the deal from the Revs. I mean, I guess MLS offered him four times what he was making. So, I mean, that's obviously a huge increase, and gets him close to that $150,000 a year kind of threshold that Steve Ralston was making. But you guys had any... What's your overall feeling on the Lorenowitz to Colorado move?
Well, I'm really disappointed to see him gone. I think he was more important to the team than I think even a lot of people give him credit for, and what he provided in the defensive midfield role. I don't know what the whole story is behind that. I don't know if anyone really does. You know, the impression that I get was maybe that the Revs didn't want to pay him as much as Colorado was willing to pay him, and he wasn't willing to come back for less than that. Certainly the injury is the reason why he wasn't able to really go out overseas and try out with clubs and try to latch on over in Europe, because I think he certainly had the talent and capability to play somewhere over there if he, you know, had been going fully healthy. So I think that was the factor is why he ended up staying in MLS. But it's very disappointing that he's not going to be back with the Revs next year, and that's going to be a huge hole to fill, and something that I hope they can bring in someone better than Pat Phelan, because I, you know, as serviceable as Pat Phelan is, I don't think it's a good for the Revs going into the season with him a pencil in to start in the midfield. But the overall, the trade there, it was good they got in Preston Burpo. He's going to be, I think, a solid guy to fill in when Matt Reese is out at the beginning of the season, and certainly they needed to fill the hole there. Corey Gibbs should be interesting. I know a lot of us are disappointed with how inconsistent Wells Thompson has been, so I don't think too many people are going to be too upset to see him go. But bringing in Corey Gibbs, like we talked about in the show before, the Revs lost a lot of their veteran presence on the defense with Jay Heaps being gone, Chris Albright being gone. So I think Corey Gibbs kind of addresses that. And, you know, should he stay healthy? People question with his knees on the turf. Certainly that's a valid concern. He has had a lot of knee injuries. So if he can stay healthy, though, I think he could be a good pickup for the team in the defense. But, you know, they kind of fixed one hole by getting rid of, by, you know, creating a new hole. So we'll see how that works out.
Hey, Brian, you still there?
Yep.
Well, I mean, you know Corey Gibbs's game. You Rhode Island guys.
That's right.
Guys. All three of you guys tonight are Rhode Island guys, right? Sean, you're Attleboro, I guess. Is that right? Or something like that?
Franklin.
Close. Close enough. Anything outside of 128 just becomes a blur to me. You know? you know, the story on Corey Gibbs, you know, went to Charlton Athletic and some other stops in Europe. Now he's back. Didn't come back. Came back to train with the Revs a couple of times. And, you know, the rumor was that he really wanted to come back to the Revs. And but with the allocation table, the way it works in the MLS is that Colorado had the first rights. Or was it L.A.? I can't even remember. But somehow Colorado got the rights to Corey Gibbs on his return to MLS, I guess that's right. So he went to Colorado, did all right out there. I mean, what can we expect out of him from a player?
Well, I think that automatically, I mean, we talked about the depth in the back, and I think that he is going to be the guy that kind of is going to be the guy, and like one of the guys in the back. I mean, I think last show we talked about having a leader out there who, you know, should Albright not return. You know, you're looking at Austin Barnes and Ose, and I mean, who's the veteran on there? It's Ose, and I mean, do you really want Ose to be the guy, you know, your leader in the back, you know? So I think that he fills that gap right there. So on that aspect, I do like the trade. I don't like the trade because I think that, you know, if Lorenowitz was signable to MLS and you know Krasnodar wasn't willing to give him the money, it's just another example of a trend that seems to be happening where it seems like, you know, it's dollars and cents with a lot of these guys, and it just seems like the club isn't willing to pay premium money for a premium player. I mean, you look at a guy like Lorenowitz, I mean he could have easily, I mean, there's no way the Revs could not have signed him. You know, and they elected not to, and instead they traded him and Wells Thompson over to Colorado for Preston Burpa, which is obviously another hole that they needed to plug. But I mean, when you're talking about goalkeepers, I mean, there's lots of free agent goalkeepers out there. You have Ray Burst and you have other guys who could have been filled in by picking up, you know, their contract. So I mean, I think that, you know, it's a trade that I think speaks to a larger issue, and that issue is the fact that the Revs simply won't pay a guy that, you know, wants more than the minimum salary.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and it's one that I've kind of debated back and forth. I mean, there have been rumblings on various other news outlets about Jeff not really wanting to be here. And I think that, you know, obviously played into his decision to, you know, accept the offer to go to Colorado, because obviously he didn't have to sign an MLS. If he really wanted to get out of MLS, he could have waited until his knee was better and headed overseas. You know, but the way that the transfer window works, obviously, if he had waited, he wouldn't be playing until, you know, June, July.
Who knows with how much money he was making? Maybe he couldn't afford to wait without bringing a salary.
That's a very good point. Mm. That's a very good point. And I don't think that would have been an option. But you know, it speaks to, I think, a couple of different things. Is that, well, why did he want to leave? I mean, he was starting every game, and he was obviously a key component of the team. And really, you know, as far as veterans go, I mean, he was young in terms of the veterans that were on this team, but he was one of the leaders of this team. And you look at what he brought in terms of his passion and not just his ability, but his passion and his drive. And you could see that he just wanted to win, really. And I remember games just watching him calling out his teammates saying, "You're in the wrong place. Get up front where you belong. You're coming back too far," you know, and he's a take charge kind of guy. And, you know, obviously, I think he had the respect of his teammates, too. So what is it that made him want to leave New England? And I think that is the big issue at stake here, is that he's got some issues with perhaps the front office or even the coaching staff, you know, making him play injured, perhaps, you know, not giving them, you know, proper – what am I looking for? What's the word? Time to heal up from his injuries, whatever. Just, you know, driving. Of course, he's going to say, "Yeah, I'm going to play," because he doesn't want to lose that starting spot. But, you know, maybe there was something else going on there. I'm not sure. Steve, do you have any insight on what was going on with Mr. Lorenowitz, or is this all kind of new to you?
No, it's not. I mean, it's a little bit new to me, but to be honest, this may have no bearing on the situation, but I can say that I'm not a lot surprised. As much as I love and respect the Kraft organization, who obviously owns the Patriots and the Revs, they have a notorious reputation in the NFL for spending low and for having sour relationships with a lot of their players after the players leave. I mean, you look at the core of the Patriots title teams, like the Brewskis and them, they all love the Krafts. But anyone who left during that time always left with a bad taste in their mouth. Current NFLPA rep, Adelius Thomas, hates the Krafts and hates Bill Belichick. But I'm wondering if that filters over into the MLS side, where you're looking at a part of the organization that probably doesn't make nearly as much money as anything else they have their hands in. They might be thinking they want to keep the bottom line as low as possible. And with that in mind, that could explain a lot of their reluctance to spend. And, I mean, if the precedent they set with the way they treat their football players if that sets a precedent for the way they treat their soccer players as well, I mean, that could be the serious problem we're having here. That actually hearing that Lorenowitz was a problem makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I think the Revs definitely employ, I want to say, I refer to it as a Piolian or a Belichickian kind of attitude when it comes to building their roster and their team, which I think inherently is flawed when you're talking about MLS because, A, it's a completely different animal. MLS is still a young league in this country. You know, we don't have the depth of player pool to field a decent team like you do in the NFL. I mean, there are not Jeff Lorenowitz's every up and down every grocery aisle stocking the shelves like Kurt Warner was in the NFL. You know, you can't just, you know, hey, you know, you tried out for our practice squad last week. Do you want to come back? It doesn't happen that way. There's just these guys can't. There's just not enough depth for the league to be able to, or for the Revs to be able to sit back and say, "Hey, yeah, we're fine. We'll find somebody to fill your spot." It's just we've seen that with obviously what's going on with trying to find a forward for to replace Taylor Twellman. It just doesn't work.
I totally agree, Hank. I not to interrupt, but I think especially with expansion and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, obviously more teams the talent pool gets thinner, but I agree 100%. I just think that, you know, finding guys, you know, who, you know, are quality players in MLS is a hell of a lot different than trying to find quality guys in the NFL because everyone wants to play in the NFL, whereas in MLS, you know, the best guys sometimes don't want to play here. Sometimes they want to play abroad. So I just wanted to agree with you on that point because I think it speaks to the whole situation as far as you know, it's not I think that the Revs are run with the Patriot gloves that, you know, adopt the Belichickian approach and you'll win. And, you know, Belichick's won 3 titles in the NFL, and not to stray too far into the NFL, but, you know, I think that the Revs kind of adopt the same attitude, you know, spend cheap, you know, low investment, high reward. And I mean, it's got them to 4, you know, MLS Cups, but no MLS Cups to bring home. So I just wanted to agree with you on that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other part that I was going to say, there's that whole aspect of trying to employ the NFL or Patriots philosophy on top of the revolution. And it kind of gets into the way that they drive their whole marketing effort and everything along those lines. It's just they're not gearing after the top players available. It's not just trying to build a brand and make it self-sustaining. You got to attract a product to the field. And, you know, when you've got players of quality, you got to do what it takes to keep them. And it's one thing to, you know, try and build something up from scratch and then, you know, and rebuild every 5 or 6 years. And that's kind of what the Reds are doing now. I mean, you have to give them a little bit of credit. They did make it to the early part of the 2000s and even up into 2006, 2007, you know, the Reds were a dominant team in the league. There's no getting around that. They've been up in the top of the Eastern Conference and near the top of the overall MLS, and at times, you know, they were the best team in the league, you know, had the best record, and then things fall apart towards the end, whatever, they drop a few points here and there on the road, but they're always in the playoffs. I mean, no other team in New England to Boston area has been in the playoffs as many times in a row as the New England Revolution. So they've got that going for them, which is great. You got to love it. But are they going to be able to do it this year? Eesh, I really don't know. I look at the roster, what we've got. We've got a lot of the same guys returning that we had last year. To my surprise, they've got Edgar Jankowskis, and there's Kelly Dubé is coming back. So you got those two guys probably going to starting it forward. Then you've got Nyasi on the right, Mansali on the left, and Shalri in the middle. Maybe they're going to play just one defensive midfielder and maybe give Zach Shalowski a call or a run out, see how he's doing. I don't know. He's still a rookie. Who knows how he's going to play. We'll see what their plans are for him further down the road. But then on the back line, you've got Barnes, Osei, and Alston, which is great. I mean, those guys at times were very, very good, especially Barnes and Alston. Osei, I'm still on the fence about. I think he's a liability. I actually like the idea of moving him out to left wing and bringing Corey Gibbs into the middle, and then have, you know, Gibbs and Darius Barnes partner together. There's also, we still have on the roster, you have Mauricio Castro, who may get a start in the middle with Monsieur Joseph, and then you've got Gabriel Badia, who somehow is still on this team. I don't understand what the attraction there is. I've only seen him play a couple of games, but you know, those couple of games, granted that he came in halfway through the season, didn't get a lot of chance. I know one of the other guys out on Twitter always says, you know, you got to give him a chance. He hasn't had a chance to really prove himself. And I was like, well, what are you basing your judgment on in the first place? If you haven't seen him play, how do you know he's going to be able to do it? I mean, the fact that he was healthy last year for a good portion of the year and still didn't play said something to me. You know, they let him play for 90 minutes during the Open Cup, and then we never saw him again. And I don't know how many of you guys went down to the Open Cup. I didn't. I've made that trip down there in the pouring rain before, and I didn't think the game was actually going to go off, but I guess it did. And it wasn't a pretty game. If you guys remember, we had a lot of injuries, and then they ended up playing the game two men down at the end because of guys being injured and nobody on the bench. So that was just a bad situation. But so we're now coming into the season. We've kind of got a pretty set roster in terms of, you know, the pieces that we know are going to be here. There's still some wiggle room. I know they've signed Zach Schulowski. They've also they've brought in some other guys. A couple of their draft picks are still in school. They've let them stay off. We'll talk about them in a minute. But they've also got another defender, Sestinovic, and who's the other guy they've got?
Zach Boggs.
Zach Boggs, who's a forward, right?
Yep.
So, you know, is he another Taylor Twellman, or is he Spencer Wadsworth? I mean, is this guy going to be able to keep a spot on this roster? I don't know. It's going to be kind of crazy. They also brought in a third defender, a third goalkeeper. Well, you know, they re-signed a lot of signings. You know, they got Mauricio Castro re-signed. They've got Bobby Shuttlesworth signed. So, you know, you've got a backup goalkeeper. You've got two backup goalkeepers on contract right now with Burpo and Shuttlesworth. And Reese will come back eventually. And presumably, you know, Reese will get the starting spot if he comes back healthy. I think overall there's a trust factor there with Matt Reese that Steve Nichol will have. And, you know, he's Preston Burpo probably when Reese will come back in, Burpo will be seeing a lot of the bench, and they may actually make a trade, I think, later down the season if Matt Reese comes back 100% healthy. And that could be like a good mid-season trade. Maybe somebody out there needs another goalkeeper, but we'll see. So they also brought in a third goalkeeper, Rylan Hawkins, out of the University of Washington. Seems like a pretty solid, you know, candidate for a backup goalkeeper, but yet they've already signed Bobby Shuttlesworth. So what's the thinking there? You know, are they going to have go into the preseason or into the regular season with three goalkeepers on the roster, and maybe farm out Rylan Hawkins if they sign him? Who knows what they're going to do? Are they going to put Matt Reese on injured reserve so they can have the extra spot, whatever it is? I'm not sure how the injured reserve policy works. I know that last year they ended up putting Taylor Twellman on injured reserve, and that opened up a spot for them to be able to sign Edgaris Jankauskas. So, you know, Sean or Brian, maybe you guys have some more experience with the injured reserve stuff.
Yeah, I think Sean and I were debating that a few times towards the end of last year as to why they didn't just put Taylor Twellman on, I guess, for lack of a better term, I think that the injured reserve, the way it works is that, you put him on injured reserve, but you can bring him back unless you say it's season ending, unless it's a season ending injury. I'm sure Sean knows more about it than I do, but I know that we were kind of befuddled towards the end of last year because there was, talk that there was an outside chance that Taylor could come back for the playoffs, and obviously it never materialized. So, I know that – I know one thing. If there's something I don't understand, it's the whole way in which the injured reserve rule was used with Taylor Twellman, because he never came back, and the presumption was that he was going to come back at some point at the end of last year, and obviously he never did.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with Brian there. I know, like he was saying with Twellman, I guess there's a season-ending injury reserve list, and then there's the injured reserve list, and they put, I think, Albert on the season-ending injury reserve list, but they didn't put Twellman on it at the end of the year. However, he was still on the injured reserve list. So what we didn't really understand was, what's the point of the season-ending injury reserve list when you can be on the injured reserve list? It has the same effect, and then you can pull the guy off of it if he's healthy. Like, that's what the confusing part for us was, because when we saw that Twellman wasn't taken off the injured reserve list, we assumed that meant he wasn't going to be able to play in the playoffs. But as it turns out, he still could have played in the playoffs had he been healthy enough to come off it. So the whole injured reserve list a little bit confusing, and that's another one of those weird MLS rules that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, but maybe there's just something we're missing from it.
Yeah, it's weird. So it kind of comes back to the point, how do we expect this roster to shake out? There's also – let's not forget there's also – we mentioned Pat Phelan earlier. They've also got Nico Colaluca, who could feasibly start in the midfield – until maybe Zach Schlawski is ready. They've also got Chris Tierney still on here, which as much as I like Chris, nice kid, he lives nearby, so I'd like to have the hometown kids in the team, so to speak. But does he really have a spot on this roster? I mean, he's got a great left leg, and he's got some pinpoint accuracy, but he's kind of on the slow side. He's not the world's best defender. How do you keep a guy like Chris Tierney on the roster when you've got all these other people here that some of these guys are Generation Adidas guys. Some of these guys could be you got Nyasi and Mansali are both playing on their national team. I don't know if he's got any hopes to keep a spot on this roster. Does anybody have any insight on or thoughts on Chris Tierney's spot?
Hank, I think and this is just based on what I observed. I actually went to training last Monday, and based on what I saw, I think he's the team's player, the union rep, because at the end of practice he called the team out and said, "Guys, we need to talk about some union stuff." So I think he maybe if he's not the player, the union rep, I think he's he has some standing on the team to where a guy like him can call together everyone and say, "Listen, we got to talk about some union stuff." So I think now that Jay's gone, I think he's the union rep. So I think he's got. I think he may be on the team the entire year, unless something disastrous happens.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. For purposes of depth, though, sorry,
go ahead, Steven.
For purposes of depth, though, at this point, I don't. Unless they pick up, unless they do make a move for a Serie or they come in. I had seen in the Revs blog something about the Senegalese midfielder Nkuki Desire.
Yep.
Unless they make a move for somebody like that, I don't think they can afford to drop Tierney at this point, only because of the versatility he presents. He's played a little left back. He can play there. He can play in central defense, even if it's not his primary position. He's a very defensive-minded midfielder. And especially having lost Lorena Witz, having lost Wells Thompson, you don't have as much. Corey Gibbs addresses a lot of the depth problems, but you're still kind of lacking that second defensive midfielder, devoted defensive midfield that'll allow Shaori to play box to box he can.
Go ahead, Sean.
So I don't know if you can. I don't know if he can be released at this point. You know.
Sean, go ahead.
With Tierney, there's a couple of things. First of all, I'll give him credit where it's due. He's a good crosser of the ball. He's certainly a better crosser of the ball than Kenny Mansali is. But at the same time, I'm not really sure he's, you know, a guy that either A, you want to have as a starter in MLS, or B, a guy that can provide a spark off the bench. And he's slow. I don't think there's any real question about that. He's not as fast as, you know, as a Kenny Mansali, or even as fast as a Mauricio Castro, who we should mention also re-signed, which I was actually a little bit surprised about, but also happy to see at the same time, because I did want him to come back. But it was just, you know, the way the Rebs have gone in the past, I kind of didn't think he would. But as far as Tierney, I think when you see him playing left back, he gets burned a lot for speed, you know, and he doesn't make up for it with the positioning sense that, say, Jay Heaps, you know, at times had. And in the midfield, he also at the same time, you know, he really can't beat anyone one-on-one from what we've seen. I know you said he can play defensive midfield. I don't think we've ever seen him do that, however, for the Revs. You know, that's something that maybe we could see more of, but he doesn't really seem like a true ball winner in the sense of a Jeff Leronowitz there. So, you know, to me, he's a serviceable player, you know, maybe like your third on the depth chart, you know, a couple different positions for the Revs, but I'm a little bit surprised to see him come back. You know, I guess he's not making a lot of money, so that's, you know, he's got that going for him. But, you know, I just, if we go into the season, if there's any point of the season where he's going to be the guy you're expecting to be starting, you know, I don't think that's a good thing. And even if he's the first, you know, one of the first guys off the bench, I don't see where he really can provide a spark. And like I said, because of that lack of speed and lack of really ability to take anyone on one-on-one, I just don't think he's an MLS-level player.
Yeah, and that's kind of been my my overall opinion of him as well. Like I said, he's got some talent. Yeah, he's much more accurate. He's much more powerful. He'd be great, you know, if you could just keep a free kick specialist like him on the roster. But you know, you got to be able to make up for it in other places. And frankly, maybe we just haven't seen enough of him in a more advanced role. He's always kind of been his spot filling here, spot filling there. And that was in his first year. Last year, he didn't play nearly as much as he did the year before. And you know, obviously, when you have a guy like Jay Heaps playing at left back, and he's the Iron Man that he is, you know, the year before, I guess, you know, Albright, and he was kind of injured a lot too. So Jay Heaps was playing right back, and then you had Amici Igwe, and Chris Tierney kind of taking turns on the left side as well. So, and then even was Wells Thompson playing left back from time to time? I mean, there's so many.
I think he did one game and got a red card in it. Or
yeah,
I came at that way. I think. Pretty sure.
Yeah, but there's another guy that, you know, you lost in the off season. You know, Wells Thompson, for all of his kind of lack of offensive prowess on the field. I mean, in college, he apparently was an excellent striker of the ball, and he never really got the opportunity he did get the opportunity. He never took advantage of the opportunities that he had with the Revolution, and never really kind of blossomed into that attacking presence in the midfield, you know, that the Revs really haven't had since Clint Dempsey left. And, you know, Andy Dorman, to a point, you know, he had some good games, and other games he just was invisible. And there's a lot of that still, you know, happens with various players on the Revolution, like Kelly Dubé, for example. It's you know, you have a hat trick one game, and then you don't see him for 3 weeks, even though he's starting every game. It's just nothing coming out of him. But, you know, I was actually surprised looking at the year-end totals and seeing that Kelly Dubé had something like 8 goals. I said, whoa. 8 goals, but you know, half of them came in one game, or 3 of them anyway. So you lost a guy like Wells Thompson who could play left side, he could play right side. You lost a guy like Amici Igwe, he could play defensive midfielder, he could play left back. These are, you know, Amici Igwe maybe, you know, never really fit in with the team, never really in Steve Nichols' plans. They obviously didn't make a huge effort to keep him. He tried to get a job overseas. I don't know where he is right now, but I think he's on his way back. You know, there's definitely been a lot of transition, shall we say, in that midfield. You let a guy like Wells Thompson go, or a guy like Michy Igwe go, that, you know, obviously have a bit more speed than Chris Tierney. You have to wonder, you know, what is he bringing to this team that is so so great that maybe they just can't trade him. Maybe nobody wants him.
Well, I mean, without Igwe, it was more useful, because without Igwe, that's one less, you know, guy in the depth chart. But I mean, Tierney is certainly a guy that can fill in, but I don't see the potential there for him to ever really be, you know, full-time MLS starter. Just more of a, you know, if he's going to be like a lifetime backup player on the Reds, which is, you hate to say, but I just don't really see in him, you know, where his game's going to develop to the point where he, you know, at least at left back or left midfield. Maybe he moves to the center, his speed doesn't become as big of an issue. But at least at left back and left midfield, I don't ever see him really being an MLS starter for this team.
Yeah, I have to agree. So we've got – where does that bring us now? We've got a fairly questionable roster. Looking at the Revs coming into the preseason, we've got a couple of preseason games lined up in the Carolinas, one against Charlotte, one against the Railhawks. And I think they were trying to get a third game lined up as well in the preseason. I think it was to be maybe against Greensboro or something like that. Not sure if they've locked that up yet. Brian, you said you were down at training.
Yeah.
And what does it look like? These guys? Good? They look sharp.
A few guys really stood out, and I gotta say, you know, Bobby Shuttleworth really stood out. I mean, they were playing the game. The day I went to training, it was last Monday, and it was their first time they had scrimmaged against each other. So it was like 8v8, and I'll tell you, you know, obviously on a short field, like inside the field house over there near Gillette, which is where they're training, where they're doing all their training right now. You know, you have limited space, so you know, the keepers face a lot of shots, and one guy that really, really impressed me was Bobby Shuttleworth. Obviously, he's probably not going to get the starting gig going into first kick, but he looked really, really good. Doesn't make all the acrobatic saves that a guy like, I think you see, you know, when I think acrobatic saves, I think of Brad Knight, and I think he's a little bit less of a risk taker than Brad Knight, but I think he's more comfortable in net than I think Brad Knight is. So I think he was a pleasant surprise. Seth Sinovic, the kid they drafted out of Creighton, my apologies. He looked really, really good. A guy from the back who really has no problem going up forward and putting the pressure on, going from box to box. And he's a guy that impressed me. I'll tell you, a guy who really didn't impress me was Ronaldo Nevea. I mean, I looked at him and, you know, I mean, I know that the Revolution blog said he scored a couple of goals in a few of those short-sided games, but his touch was bad, and he looked really out of place. He didn't seem to gel with the rest of the team. So, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say we're not going to see Nevea again, at least not at the asking price that I think he was looking for. I think he's one of those guys that was looking for, you know, was looking for six figures. I don't think the Revs were going to give it to him. But aside from him, I think Sinovic looked good. Bobby Shuttleworth looked good. Jankowskis looked pretty good. Didn't get hurt, which was good to see. Didn't fall to the pitch anytime I saw him. He looked good. Darius Barnes looked really, really good, I think. And, you know, I think those are the guys that really stood out during training on Monday.
That's good news. I mean, I had mixed emotions when I heard about this guy. Nevea immediately went out and looked and said, you know, if he's that good, how come he's not playing anywhere right now? They had some issues, or he had some issues, I guess, back in Chile with the national team and another game. I want to say Colo Colo was the name of the team he was going to play with, but then they just basically told him that they didn't want him anymore, or something along those lines. But he also came under the recommendation of Cuauhtémoc Blanco, So yeah, you have to kind of say, okay, yeah, really? you know, since when are we going to take Blanco at his word? I mean, but yeah, I mean, in his peak, he was notorious goal scorer, you know, Club America and some other teams down in the FMF. I just, you know, I saw it, I immediately went out and I Googled some of his stuff and said, yeah, you know, boy, he doesn't really look like he's in top shape. He kind of looks like that guy that, you know, he kind of looks like Brazilian Ronaldo. You know what I mean? And but if he could score like Brazilian Ronaldo, great. Hey, you know, Brazilian Ronaldo right now, I think, would be a better signing for the Revolution than just about anybody. And plus, you'd get to bring in a ton of those Brazilian fans that love to come in, down to Gillette once a year. But you know, you look out. Who else is out there right now? Do you think that the Revs could bring in as a you know, as a forward, a goal scorer, 10 goal a year scorer? But Steve, we kind of been sitting there quiet. You got any ideas about goal scorers out there that you'd like to see?
I liked you've been. I know you've been harping a little while on Ryan Johnson, and that's. I mean, that's what you need right there. The 11 goals that he scored for San Jose, you put that on our team last year, we go from being the second worst goal scoring team in the league to the second best. 11 goals make that difference. And I think he would be a great pickup. I also think a healthy Jankauskas is going to do a lot more for this team than maybe that happened last year. Like I said, I didn't see a lot of the games. I'm not really sure exactly how well he did or how much pitch time he actually got. But a healthy Jankauskas is a guy who's big, he's physical, he's going to win balls, he's going to provide knockdowns, and I really wish Taylor would have been healthy for that, because Taylor could benefit from that immensely. But a fast guy like Kelly Dubé playing off of him could be scary if you can get Dubé to show up for every game. As far as picking up another goal scorer goes, I mean, I think Ryan Johnson is probably the best that's available right now. Although I have to say, I mean, I've just been looking at a couple of YouTube videos. Zach Boggs is all over YouTube, and he actually looks like he's got tremendous close control and a great touch. So, I mean, who knows? We get lucky with that one right there.
Yep, could be a sleeper. the thing about Ryan Johnson is that he's still under contract with San Jose, so that would have to be a trade. You know, and I don't know if we just have the pieces to pull that trade off, or you know, trade for allocation money or draft picks or whatever. You know, those 11 goals that he scored for San Jose, I mean, San Jose's going to want those 11 goals. You know, they're not going to give them up for nothing. But they did make this signed a Brazilian striker named Eduardo, who's coming in from playing in Europe, I believe.
FC Basel, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he played in Germany, right? Yeah, Switzerland. Yeah. So he's coming over. Maybe, you know, maybe that pushes Ryan Johnson to the periphery. But frankly, you know, as 11 goals is better than anything we've got right now. So I mean, they're going to keep him for whatever it's worth. And I don't foresee him being traded anytime soon. And then, you know, you get the whole situation next year. When his contract is up, you know, how do the Revs go about acquiring him? You know, if the rights are owned by San Jose, they're going to make him an offer, and you know, maybe he doesn't want it. Maybe he really wants to come back and play in his hometown of Boston, where his family is and where his friends are, and things along those lines. But you know, frankly, I think it's a stretch to try and think that we're going to be able to pull off a trade before the season starts. I think the best way to do it is to make a free agent signing, and I don't know if it's going to be any time before preseason. To be honest, maybe Zach Boggs starts with his team, and again, it comes down to how many roster spots are available. I mean, if Taylor Twellman is going to hold that spot until he's healthy, then you know there might not be room for Zach Boggs.
Right. Another name actually that I've been hearing bandying about, supposedly he's close to sign. He's thinking about signing with Seattle. I don't know what kind of a fit it would be for New England, but a swoop for a Blazin Kufo. He's a Swiss international. He's out of contract with Twente right now. or he's not out of contract, but he's looking to sign with MLS. He's been linked with Seattle. This is a guy, I mean, he hasn't done well in the international level for Switzerland, but he's been with FC Twente in Holland since 2003. He scored 111 league goals in 213 league games. And I've seen him play. You know, I've watched a lot of games. I've watched Switzerland play. I watched all the Euros. And he's a force. 6'2", he's physical, and he's a proven goal scorer. I mean, the problem that I have with that is he's 34 years old. I mean, he's still been playing great the past couple of seasons. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like he hasn't really waned too much.
Right.
Although, I mean, that's not entirely true. Last season, he did only score 9 goals, but that's still, you got to think that's in the Eredivisie, which is a level above the MLS, to say the least, especially when you're playing against Ajax, Feyenoord, and PSV. You know, if that's it doesn't fit the Revs' MO to make the move, but if you can make a swoop in for someone like that, that could be huge, right? I mean, that could give you Ryan Johnson production plus. And it would have to be like a two season thing. I don't think he'd do much more for you than that, but that could be enough, you know, to find for a Zach Boggs or a Shalowski to develop, or for you to find someone else around the league or Ryan Johnson's contract to come up, and you can make a move for him where he's younger, you know?
Well, I was impressed to hear along the same lines that Chicago Fire bring in that Collins John, who is only 24 years old.
That's huge. Like,
yeah, if they can manage to sign him, I don't know how he's looking now. I mean, obviously he hasn't scored a ton of goals in his career, but he's got, you know, quite the pedigree too, playing in the Premier League, you know, playing all over the place. And he's especially a young guy like him, who's only 24, that he'd be a big signing. It would be great if the Reds could get someone like him. At the same time, you know, maybe Chicago signs him. Maybe somebody from Chicago becomes available via trade for the Reds. Who knows? Maybe like a Kalen Carr, guy that can at least provide a little more depth. But you know, just as worrying as the forward position now is who's going to be providing these guys with goals. I mean, looking at the roster and who's gone, half of the Revs' assists last year came from players who aren't going to be in the team this year. So I mean, they were a low-scoring team this year. Now losing half of the assists from last year, you know, Steve Ralston, Jay Heaps. You know, even Wells Thompson, all those guys who pitched in, you know, setting up goals, you know, they're gone. So even if you bring in a new forward, it's someone to provide for them. This midfield right now, I'm not sure they can do that. You know, I think Castro is a guy that, you know, potentially could do that. We still haven't seen enough of him to say that. You know, he hasn't really given enough of a run out. But, you know, this midfield right now, you know, what forward, you know, you can get the best forward in the world. Even if Taylor Twellman's back, you know, how many chances is he going to get next year unless they bring in someone who can really create, you know, in this midfield?
Right. Right, and that brings back to the whole absence from, you know, Clint Dempsey, that kind of that secondary threat right behind the strikers. Steve Ralston, too. These guys were great at creating those opportunities, and we just haven't seen that out of Mansali or Niasse. And, you know, it's going to cost us. It's going to cost the Revs big time this year. And you know, back to the whole Collins John thing. I mean, why can't the Revs sign somebody like that? What is it about the makeup of this front office organization or something along these lines that, you know, there's something there that is saying, the Revs saying, no, we can't take a risk on this player, or the players just don't want to come to New England? I don't know what it is. But there's something out there, and it's got to be addressed, because there's no way that, you know, the Revs are going to be able to, you know, make it a ninth season in a row, whatever, into the playoffs. Unless they get another goal scorer. And it's just Steve Ralston gone, like you said, Jeff Lorenowitz, obviously these guys are going to be seriously missed in the midfield. You move Shawry Joseph up front to start scoring goals again. Who's going to be in the midfield supplying him with anything? You know, where are the goals going to come from? So I don't know. They've got a couple of other guys waiting on the wings, Jace Griffiths and I want to say Welch. Is that right? Is that his name? Both of these guys have gone back to school, so maybe they'll come do their trials, you know, at the end of May, beginning of June, something like that, when the World Cup break starts. Who knows what's going to happen there? In the past, these guys have come in and they've gone back home or gone somewhere else. You know, generally speaking, it doesn't look like that these guys, you know, in the past, from historically perspective, these guys have never, guys that they've allowed to go back to school, have never come back in and made an immediate impact and won a spot on the team. If they were going to win a spot on the team, they'd be here right now training with the guys. And I think that's pretty obvious. Maybe, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I don't see it happening anytime soon. So I think we can write off those guys, is my point. So next up, we've got the schedule has been finalized, and it's out there. We've got 40 days until the Revs' first kick in Los Angeles. And what do you guys think about the LA game is always one I like to watch. Do you think Landon Donovan's going to be back? I think if Landon Donovan's back, we may be in trouble.
Surprisingly, I actually think he will be. I think the part of the stipulation, he made the stipulation that he was going to get this kind of a loan when he signed his contract. But the other thing that the contract does for the MLS is it makes a transfer prohibitive. And they have a lot more leverage over him, I think, to bring him back. I think he will. I think he's got something to prove where part of him probably will want to stay. But after the bust up he had with Beckham over Beckham's move to Milan, I have a feeling he'll come back and start the MLS season. I don't think he'll finish it. He'll start the MLS season. He'll go to the World Cup. He'll engineer a move in July or August, and he'll be gone for next season. For the end of this coming season, to start the next season in Europe. If Everton are smart, they'll break the bank to keep him. He's been their best player for the last three or four weeks. I've seen, I've been keeping up on the highlights, trying to watch the matches if I can, and he's just looked. He looks like he does against like St. Kitts and Nevis when he plays for the national team. Like he looked like he does against Barbados. He's toying with the Premier League defenses right now. Tore apart Chelsea. They didn't know what to do with him. And that's one of the best defenses in the Premier League. I don't think he'll be – come August, he will not be in the MLS anymore, but I do think he'll come back for first kick. So that's bad for us.
But looking at the schedule going forward, I mean, it's we've got a pretty balanced schedule coming up, and I'm actually getting pretty psyched. I'm planning a couple of away trips up and down the East Coast. I want to get down to D.C., especially down to Philadelphia, but I also want to really get down to, and it's going to be a weeknight game for the Red Bull Arena, which I think is not until the I'm trying to find the schedule now. What did I do with it? It's not until March or not March, excuse me. It's not until September or October.
And it's actually the last game of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the last game. So there you go. So that's not going to work too well. But and it's on a Thursday night. Is that right?
Yep. So, unfortunately.
Yep. So maybe we'll be taking Friday off. Who knows?
Just make sure you're packing, because from what I've heard, it's in a really bad neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in a really bad neighborhood.
Well, I'll have to have Mark Fishkin, bring me into the kind of a secure automobile. Maybe we'll get borrow a bulletproof.
That's right, bulletproof glass
or something.
That's right.
we'll get smuggled in, maybe in the team bus, and they'll have some reinforced glass or something.
I want a live podcast of that.
All right, we'll figure that out somehow. I can figure out a live podcast from my iPhone or whatever. It'd be crazy. It'd be like a pilgrim in an unholy land.
Yeah.
But they've got a great facility down there, and I haven't heard any rumblings from the Revolution in terms of, in a while anyway, on the prospect of a soccer-specific stadium. But I tell you now, the 2018 World Cup cities being announced, and Boston being picked over Chicago, and that's got to be some kind of crazy incentive there. I mean, is it just because Gillette holds 70,000 people that, and Toyota, they have Soldier Field there too. What Chicago gets overlooked? I don't understand that, but I'm thinking that maybe that's the final push, to get maybe this summer too. Maybe it's the final push to get this soccer specific stadium built in Boston. Have you guys heard any rumblings on that whatsoever?
I've heard nothing, Hank. I know it'll be the second question asked of Mike Burns at Revolution Media Day, because it always is. The first question is the DPA. The second question is the soccer-specific stadium. So I guarantee you that it'll be addressed. Last I heard, Somerville was still the quote-unquote leading contender as far as getting a stadium done. But I think just to go back on your point as far as you know Boston getting the one of the sites for the potential 2018-2022 World Cup, coming here if the U.S. does win the bid for either year. I think that's more of Sunil Gulati getting, wielding his power, as since he is the president of Kraft Soccer. It's really him that's, I think, gave Boston gave him one of the sites. And I mean, you look at Gillette. I think it's because Gillette holds all those people. 70,000, close to 70,000 seats. You can't. It's hard to overlook it. And especially when you talk head to head with Chicago, I think. Nobody's happy with the new Soldier Field, from what I've heard, and obviously you don't want to have a World Cup game at Toyota Park. So, not at all. So I think, if there's anything going on, I haven't heard anything. The last I heard was it was still Somerville. So I don't know if anyone's heard anything else.
That's basically what I've heard, which is kind of sad. But at the same time, I've always said when Kraft's own. Gillette Stadium, they're going to milk that as much as possible. They've just finally put the finishing touches on Patriot Place, and I don't see it going away anytime soon. I think the Revs are going to have that for their home until somebody either buys the Revolution away or the Revs fold. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's going to go on with, speaking of teams folding and the league and all that other stuff, what do you guys hear on the CBA? Any good news? I know they've extended again out to the end of the month, but what does that really mean for the league? Seem to be a couple of sticking points that prohibited them, and the whole snowstorm thing is BS. I think that's just
absolutely
an excuse to prolong the inevitable here. But there's obviously some sticking points between the league and the players' union. What do you guys hear rumblings around Revolution on that?
Well, I know. Sorry, Sean, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I haven't heard much, but I do think it's a good sign that they've been continuing with preseason, delaying this, as opposed to just going straight and they haven't agreed to anything, having a lockout. I think it's a good sign that they are working through it. Like you said, the snowstorm thing, that's probably just an excuse. But at the same time, it's definitely a good thing to see if they are extending it rather than making some rash decision to call off the season or have a lockout and actually are going through with preseason. So that right now is that the best thing for the league.
What I've been able to hear from it, I'm sure Hank, you might have heard this too. I think you follow 24th Minute on Twitter as well. Dwayne Rollins from 24th Minute, he's a Canadian soccer blogger. I trust his sources generally. He's usually pretty on top of things. And I think I heard this actually from somewhere else to confirm it. But from what I've been able to gather, what they've agreed on is an increase to the cap, which was expected. And they're working on a system to guarantee contracts to a certain extent. They're actually on amicable terms about that. The sticking point is still free agency, I think. The players want free movement within MLS, which personally I don't see a huge problem with that. I mean, they're talking about price inflation, but with a salary cap as restrictive as the MLS is, how much can you really inflate salaries before it comes to a point where players are going to realize they need to accept less money or they're not going to get work? I really think that the MLS is blowing it out of proportion as far as how much it's going to inflate salaries, because a free agency system works perfectly in salary cap sports like football, like basketball. And I mean, the fact that that's still the sticking point is kind of disappointing to me, but from what I've been able to hear, that's the only thing that they're really not coming together on right now. They've agreed on a small upgrade from 2.3 mil to 2.6 or 2.7 mil on the cap, but it's something. And they're trying to iron out a deal to work out guaranteed contracts to a certain point. But the players want a level of free agency, and MLS is just not budging on it. That's the last thing I was able to gather. I'm not 100% sure it's true, but it's coming from fairly reliable sources. So
that's basically what I've heard. I did read that piece. But, you definitely bring some interesting points to bear. I think, though, overall, the it's going to end up. My gut tells me that the players are going to lose in this, just to a degree. I don't see them. Part of me wants them to strike, to not agree to whatever, and then have them get locked out. I don't know what that will do. I think that will ruin the league financially, and probably irreparably. And then you look at all these guys maybe flocking off to parts unknown, to NASL or USL, and we have to start all over again. But if the players make a stand and say, you know, we really need this last piece, I just see it ending badly. I just really do. I don't think it's going to be beneficial for the league at all. So, hey Brian, you mentioned something that was the Pigment. When is media day?
I asked Jeff Lemieux, the guy in charge of he's actually one of the point people over at the Revs, and I actually asked him on Monday when that would be, and he says they were working on it. They don't have a definitive date as of yet, but typically it's usually a week ahead of the first game of the season. I know last year it was late. Last year they actually played the first game of the season, and then they had media day. But granted, that game was on the road. I forget who. That was the San Jose game. That's what it was. They had it the Thursday following the San Jose game. So typically, it's usually held it's usually held a week prior to the first game of the season. So that should be coming up. I would guesstimate middle of next month.
Cool. Hopefully, I will be able to attend that. A couple of new news tidbits to speak. I've started a new affiliation with American Soccer News Network with the Revs ASN webpage. So we're going to be partnering. The Midnight Ride will be appearing on that webpage as well as its own, and links to the podcast. I'm going to be pretty much everything that I used to write. I will now be kind of publishing it on the Revolution American Soccer News Net page. So I'm pretty excited about that. Working with Nathaniel, who's in charge of the overall thing, also works with, he does the New York Red Bull stuff for them. So it's going to be a good partnership, I think, for the podcast as well as for his website and getting it forward. And hopefully getting some contributions from Steve as well. We'll be talking further along those lines. Steve, wants to get his stuff in print, so to speak. So we're going to give him a little spot to do that from time to time. I'd love to have any contributions that Sean and Brian, you guys want to bring anytime. You guys feel like you're getting limited by the man or whatever. You need another outlet. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about.
By all means,
there's a home for you over here. So hopefully we'll be heading down and we'll all be down in the press box sometime. Keeping my fingers crossed on that, and that'll be a whole lot of fun. We're coming up at the end of the hour, and so I just want to say thanks to you guys for coming on and talking Revs. It's going to be I think it's going to be a long season. My initial vibe here is one of trepidation and fear, and I just don't dark and gloom, pessimism. Storm clouds over my head, and it's going to be a really tough season. I think for Steve Nichol, it's going to be one of rebuilding. It's going to be one of a few bright spots until we can sort out, who's going to really drive this team from the midfield. And I'm assuming Shaury Joseph's going to be the captain. I don't know if anybody's made any formal. Things like that. I know he was offered it a couple of years ago, but he wasn't sure he was going to stay with the team, so he refused it. But I do know that he filled in for Steve Ralston last year quite a bit when Steve was injured. So that may be who takes up the armband. But it really comes down to who's going to be that attacking presence in the midfield that helps spark the offense. Maybe draw some of the defenders away from guys like Jankowskis and Dubé so that they can do their damage up front. But Any final words from you guys? We'll start at the with Mr. Brian O'Connell. What do you got?
All right. I guess you know what? You know, not to sound like the pessimist, Hank, but I also have to agree with you that this could be a very long season. I think this is a very young team, and I think when you, especially depending upon when Taylor comes back, if he comes back this year, I think this could be a very trying year for Steve Nichol personally, especially without his right hand man and Paul Mariner. So I think the effects will be felt of not just that, but I also think that you know you have such a young team. I mean, you know, without Ralston, I mean, even if you have everybody else back from last year, with his exception of Ralston, I still think it's a trying year. But without Ralston, and then without Larenowitz, and without you know Taylor Twellman for a chunk of the season, depending on how big that chunk is, I think it's going to be you know in every sense of the word a rebuilding year for the Revs. So you know hopefully we see some guys show some flat you know show us some you know some flashes. We see some guys that can make moves and that can you know open some eyes. But I think that this year is really you know it's year zero. I think in for this kind of regime, if you want to call it a new regime. So it has the makings of being a long year.
Agreed. Steve.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you on that. I will say, I do want to say that, every year it seems, I thought last year we were missing a lot. We still ended up in the mix and only scoring 33 goals in the season. That's a pretty big accomplishment. Steve's going to find a way to win. He's going to find a way to get us to the playoffs. I don't think we're going to do any damage there. But I do think that this is going to be the kind of season where you're going to really see who's going to be sticking around for the long haul. We're going to keep to build the team and who's not. Because there's a lot of young players that need to step up and they're all going to get their chance to play both in the league and in the Open Cup and in the Superliga. They're going to get a lot of playing time. And that's where you're going to see who has quality and who doesn't. And I'm actually kind of excited about it because I always love seeing, you know, the Revs have a really great draft record. And I always love seeing the one that we always have a surprise draft pick. I love to see come through. So I think we're going to be there in the playoffs, but I don't think we're going to do any damage. And it's going to be kind of depressing.
Wrap it up, Sean. Well, no, I hate to agree with everyone else, but certainly it doesn't look too promising right now. I know you mentioned earlier, as far as making the playoffs this year, I know I mentioned earlier that the Revs, all the New England sports teams have been making it the most consecutive years, making it every year since 2002. I mean, but you look at how that's been going too, not just player-wise, but if you look at the league, you know, back then 8 of 10 teams made it, you know, and now we're at the point where 8 of 16 teams made it. And when 8 of 10 teams made it, that wasn't really much of an accomplishment. You know, now it actually is becoming something. And if you look at the Revs, you know, roster over these years, I consider, you know, 2005, maybe 2006, to be the years when the Revs, you know, really had the best roster that this team has ever had. They were playing some great soccer. Since then, the defense is weakened, the offense is weakened, the midfield is weakened. You know, you got Reese out, you know, a significant portion of the season. Just from last year alone, if you look at the Revs' starting lineup to begin the season last year, you know, I think it's significantly weaker than it was last year. Unless they can add some major additions, or at least one or two key guys, or unless these rookies really do step up. I think you're putting too much pressure on the rookies right now, based on the roster. But you know, just looking at the team last year, I think the defense is weaker without Jay Heath back there, the leadership. Corey Gibbs, I think, is a great addition if he stays healthy and if he returns to form. Because to me, his play in Colorado was nowhere near to the same level of his play back when he was playing in Holland or in the Premier League, or even for the U.S. national team in some of those big games where he looked so good. Even discounting that, you know, caught a wash without Jeff Larenowitz, I think defensively the Revs are a lot worse off as well. Offense, like we've already mentioned, Steve Ralston's gone. You know, that's a huge hole. That's one of the few creative guys this team has had left up there. I mean, you talk about Shar Joseph. You know, he's a great player, but he doesn't have the offensive awareness to make those key passes that Ralston does. He can do it occasionally, and he has a lot more defensive prowess and a lot more maybe scoring ability than Ralston. But he's just not that playmaker guy that Ralston is. And I don't think you really have that on the team. Like I said, Castro, you know, can he be that guy? I think he has potential to. I think if we see him play more this season, you know, maybe. But you know, even without that, now it sounds like Twellman's not going to be ready to start the season. Right. So you're starting off with Jankauskas and Dubé up top. One thing I will say is I was surprised Jankauskas was re-signed. I didn't think he looked that good last year. I don't know what he's making this year. If he's making significantly less, you know, that's fair to re-sign him. But I have trouble believing that that's the case, considering what he was making last year. However, with Jankauskas, you know, if he comes in, gets a preseason under his belt, you know, comes into the season in a lot better shape. I know, I forget who it was who earlier said that, you know, he can be a tall guy, a physical guy, winning those headers. He couldn't do that last year. He was the one that was getting pushed off the ball, you know, was losing out on headers to a lot shorter defenders. If he comes into this preseason, gets in great shape, you know, gets stronger and goes out there and can be that guy, you know, he could be a great guy for this team. If he comes out there and plays like he did last year, you know, I really don't think he adds that much, and I think they're still going to struggle mightily to score up top. So unless there's some key changes, I think, both in the midfield and up top, I have trouble seeing the Revs making the playoffs this year, which I hate to say.
Yeah, I'm you know, I think we're all pretty much on the same page there. It's going to be tough. One way or the other, it's going to be tough. You know, you talked a little bit about, you know, Taylor Twellman, which we found out earlier. You know, there was an article in Soccer America where Steve Nichols said doesn't look like he's going to start the season. So we don't even know when he's expected back. The nature of his injury, it could be day-to-day. It could be months again. I mean, who knows? So hopefully that's you know, down the road we get a bit clearer picture of when to expect him back. But also, let's not forget, Mauricio Castro is actually suspended for the first few games.
Yep.
Because of that playoff game in Chicago where he overreacted, shall we say. But that's a story that you know, maybe we'll talk about some other time. But like I said, thanks, guys, so much for coming on. It's been great. Steve, you did a great job. You're definitely going to have you back on again. Very, very glad you can make it on tonight.
Thanks.
And we'll probably do it again in a couple of weeks. We'll get a better, clearer picture as preseason proceeds. And then once we get going on a weekly basis, once the season starts. So looking forward to it, guys. And Brian, Sean, as usual, you guys totally rock.
Thanks, Hank.
You're welcome. And all right, and so until then, this is the end of the Revolution Recap on the Midnight Ride. So thanks, everybody. Well, cheers. All right. Good job.
That was fun.